Hi, this is John Jenkins, Managing Editor of thecorporatecouncil.net, and I'd like to welcome you to our latest Timely Takes podcast. Joining me today are Beth Berg, Paul Choi, and Jim Dukiyet from Sidley. They, along with their colleague, Helen Jazar, recently authored an article highlighting some important considerations for companies thinking about updating earnings guidance through a pre-release. We've got a link to that article in the Hot Topics box on our homepage, and it's a great piece on a very fraught topic, and I'm delighted that Beth, Paul, and Jim have agreed to share some additional insights on earnings pre-releases with us today. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
For having us.
Okay, let's kick it off. Tell our little listeners a bit about yourself and your practice. And Beth, maybe you can start things off for us.
Glad to. Hi, I'm Beth Berg. I'm a corporate and M&A partner with nearly 23 years of experience in Sidley's Chicago office. I have a public company focused practice centered on M&A, shareholder activism defense, corporate governance, and SEC disclosure.
Great, John. I'm Paul Choi, also a corporate partner based in our Chicago office. And my practice is similar to Beth's. It's focused on M&A work, particularly with our public company clients. And I also spend a lot of time advising our public company clients on a broad array of topics related to things like SEC issues, disclosure, fiduciary duty, and governance matters.
Great. And this is Jim Dukiyet. I'm a litigator. I'm one of the heads of our securities and shareholder litigation practice. And my practice principally focuses on shareholder disputes. I do a lot of securities fraud, M&A litigation, lots of Delaware fiduciary duty types of litigation, and a lot of counseling as well on disclosure and related issues.
Great. Well, as we mentioned at the top of this, the thing that brings us all together today is an article on updating earnings guidance through earnings pre-releases. Again, that's a fraught topic. It's one that public company lawyers have struggled on. I want to raise some questions with our panel here and have them give some feedback. And maybe the first one is, when would a company be required to do something like this to pre-release earnings?
Yeah, this is Jim. I'll take that one. One of the things that makes this such a fraught topic, John, to use your language, is that it's actually quite rare to be able to say with a lot of confidence that you have a clear legal obligation to issue a release on a different cadence than you're otherwise obligated to do under the SEC rules. And so it is certainly true that you'll see plaintiffs' lawyers making claims that information should have been disclosed sooner. But a lot of times when you're talking about pre-releases, you're talking about pretty dramatic changes in guidance that you've given to the market previously. That's forward-looking information. It's typically protected under the safe harbor of the PSLRA. And so it's an unusual circumstance where I think you could go to your board or management and say, we must, as a legal matter, make this disclosure. So instead, it's a much more nuanced assessment that includes legal considerations, but it includes all kinds of other factors as well, investor sentiment, investor relations, business considerations, and the like. So to say sort of, when are you required to make a disclosure really is a much trickier question in this context than you might expect.
Well, maybe let's kind of turn to the practicalities then, since the legal stuff is not always clear cut. And but what's kind of the typical scenario where you would see companies voluntarily pre-releasing earnings?
This is Beth. I would say outside of the securities offering context, this issue typically comes up when it becomes clear to management that actual results are going to differ materially from what was contemplated by previously issued guidance or from consensus estimates. So for companies that give quarterly guidance, it tends to happen toward the end of the quarter or during the quarter close process in the weeks preceding earnings release for that quarter.
In thinking about this, if a company is considering this, what are kind of the key business and investor relations considerations that they need to factor into the decision about whether or not to pre-release?
This is Paul speaking. So that's a great question, because I think some of the most important considerations in this area are actually not the legally driven ones. It does tend to be some of the business and investor relations points. I think, later in this podcast, we'll delve a little bit more into some of those purely legal issues, but let me touch briefly on three of these sort of, you know, non-legal factors that often come into play. First is that many public companies are very focused, and appropriately so, on maintaining credibility with investors and with the analyst community. So if a company's previously issued guidance and it looks like actual results are going to miss, and it's going to miss badly, not only is it a blindside all the constituents here, but it does raise issues for credibility, management's ability to understand and forecast their business. And this is despite the fact that every earnings release at the end has a long list of all the disclaimers and factors that can cause actual results to differ materially from those forecasts. Notwithstanding that, if there is actually a real miss, the credibility of management is called into question. And so pre-announcing, when management becomes aware that the actual results are going to differ, you know, considerably from their forecast, can help mitigate some of the issues around credibility. At a minimum, it shows transparency and good faith. And it shows that, you know, management's willing to have a continued dialogue with the street on, you know, as facts emerge. The second thing that I'll mention in terms of these business and sort of non-legal factors is that if there is a determination to do a pre-announcement, it's really important to get that announcement right. We tell clients, you know, if you're going to do a pre-announcement, you should do it only once, meaning a situation in which you pre-announce and then you realize, wait, that was still too optimistic, and you have to do another pre-announcement before actual release of earnings. It probably makes the situation worse, because it calls into, again, the credibility of management. Or if you pre-announce and you lower your forecast, but the actual results are a miss to your lowered forecast, again, you might have made the situation worse. So if you're going to do it when you have a good understanding of the facts, when you're comfortable with the new number you're going to put out, or if you don't have a new number, you're comfortable with the range. So the third thing I'll say on the sort of practical considerations is to consider the precedent that you're setting. I think it is a very real fact that if you decide to pre-announce, you may be creating an expectation in your investor base, among the analysts who follow you, that if this situation were to arise again in the future, that you would do something similar. And it may restrict your freedom to act differently.
Great. If I can just interject one thing, I actually had an experience where one of my clients did pre-announce. And one of the questions that you sometimes get is, well, why did you wait until now to do this? Why so long? And the response, which stopped the questioner in the tracks, was kind of the one you suggest, Paul, which is, we only wanted to do this once.
That's right.
So, we've talked about the business and investor relations issues. Let's turn to the legal and compliance stuff, because there are definitely some things to keep in mind there. So maybe you can discuss what legal risks and compliance obligations companies need to keep in mind if they opt to pre-release.
Sure. This is Jim. I'll take that one. There are a couple things I think that are important to be focused on. You know, obviously, sort of by definition, you will be in possession of material non-public information, both with respect to the decision to go ahead and actually do a pre-release, but also with respect to whatever the underlying situation is that has caused you to make that, you know, decision to go forward. And so considerations along, you know, Reg FD, insider trading are all things that you know, the company should be keeping kind of top of mind. Going back to a question that you asked earlier, you know, one of the circumstances that we sometimes see is a company that attends an industry, you know, conference on a regular basis, and it's held every, you know, year at the same time. What do they do, you know, if the meeting falls during a period when they're contemplating the need to do a pre-release? That can be a very, very challenging circumstance. And so sometimes you'll see companies decide to try to do a pre-release in advance because they make a decision that it would be better to get that information out there than have to, you know, cancel their attendance at the conference, which could potentially send an even worse signal to the market. So those are the kinds of things that need to be kept in mind as you're working through the process of doing this just once, as Paul says. You're necessarily going to need to pull in kind of a group of employees. And so you're going to keep close tabs on who is privy to both the underlying facts and the fact that you're going to do a pre-release. You should have in place, you know, sort of clear rules about trading. You might want to just set up a blackout, you know, for folks who are kind of under the tent on these issues. But it's difficult because the announcement is almost certainly going to be market moving in terms of your stock price. That's the reason, frankly, that you're going to do it, is that you want to get that information out there and it's material. And so it's very likely to result in a significant stock price movement. And so keeping issues of FD and insider trading and the like are really important. From a litigation perspective, there's sort of two components of this that I'll touch on briefly. There's sort of a conventional wisdom out there that, you know, one of the benefits of doing a pre-release is it's going to minimize or reduce your damages if you're ever sued in a securities fraud case. And the theory there is you're going to basically cut off the class. You're going to make the class shorter because people who buy, you know, after that release would not, you know, be in the class as opposed to waiting until when you normally do your earnings release. And, you know, the answer to that is, you know, maybe, you know, there could be some benefit. It's probably marginal. You know, that shouldn't be, I tell clients, a driver of making a decision like this. It should be all the other reasons that Paul and Beth have identified. But it's something certainly to keep in mind. More important is sort of a kind of a component of what Paul is talking about, which is, you want to do this once and you want to get it right because any pre-release is going to generate a lot of scrutiny from the plaintiff's law, you know, securities bar. They're going to be paying a lot of attention to what you say, what you don't say. And in the process of dealing with the investor credibility and the investor relations components of this and telling the story of why it is this happened, you're going to really want to make sure that you're thinking about it from a litigation perspective, because frankly, you're going to get stuck with that story. And so you should, you know, take great pains to make sure that you have it right. And that, in subsequent litigation, if it's ever filed, you're going to be able to build upon that explanation, for purposes of forming your defense to a lawsuit.
Great. Jim, in the course of his remarks, talked about the need to drag a lot of people in. And that kind of, I think, raises another interesting topic, which is it's a big decision. Who needs to be involved in making it?
Yeah. So I find that whenever companies face complex decisions, the best answers tend to come from a multidisciplinary team. And this is no exception. So there are not only legal considerations, but also IR, financial and accounting, business and strategic considerations. And so in deciding whether a company is going to pre-release results, it's really important to gather a team. So you need finance and accounting input to ensure the accuracy of the financial information that would be pre-released. So you can do one pre-release. You need to work with the company's independent auditor and audit committee and consider whether to involve the board chair or the rest of the board. You should also involve the head of IR and if the company has one, it's outside IR firm. They can advise about investor expectations, how a pre-release or a lack thereof would be perceived and what it should say. And then the CEO and CFO, who are usually the ones on the front lines of interacting with many investors and analysts, they can weigh in on how making a pre-release may impact their relationships, their credibility, you know, with both investors and analysts. And they can also weigh in on other strategic considerations. And of course, last but not least, it's important to involve the general counsel and outside counsel, including both litigators and securities disclosure counsel, because they bring different things to the table in advising about the legal risks and the content of the pre-release. As Jim said, you can be stuck with it if you have a securities litigation case on your hands following the pre-release, or a decision not to make a pre-release and just go forward on the normal earnings schedule. So the bottom line is that this type of decision should definitely not be made in any silo.
Great. Kind of throwing this out to the panel, do's and don'ts, companies that when it comes to pre-releases, can you suggest some do's and some don'ts for those companies?
Yeah, you know, John, it's Paul again. I think we've covered actually a lot of the key points in this podcast, and you know, just echoing, I think what all of us have said, it's very fact specific. It's a complex decision. Oftentimes, it's a consideration of legal and non-legal factors. One thing that maybe this discussion highlights for our listener is the importance of taking care when making those initial forecasts, making sure that it's done with facts that are objectively reasonable, and issued with subjective good faith, you know, both parts of that standard. And so if you have a strong basis for the projection when made, you at least have a strong legal argument if actual results are going to differ, that maybe you don't have to, and as a legal matter, be compelled to do an update. However, I think, you know, one of the points that, you know, that we'd emphasize it's our experience with clients, is at the end of the day, it's a lot of those non-legal business and IR points that weigh heavily in the minds of our clients. It's, you know, maintaining that credibility with investors and with analysts. And I guess the last point that I'll leave you with is to echo some of the comments that Beth made, which is that this is the kind of decision making that you do need to bring in lots of different perspectives. You need the legal analysis, of course, but the strategic, the accounting, the IR, and you need the board input.
Yeah, and I would just add to that, again, almost by definition, you're dealing with some underlying issue that's distracting to management. That's the whole reason you're going to make your announcement in the first place. And so I think I would sort of counsel along the lines that Paul just suggested. You need to have patience. You need to involve sort of the right group of people. You need to take the time to get it right. But you also need to appreciate that you're dealing usually with a client, if you're an outside counsel, who's themselves dealing with whatever is the underlying situation that's causing the miss in performance. And so, you know, getting their attention, getting them focused on sort of the right set of considerations is very important. And the more folks that you have involved in those discussions, I think the better.
Okay, well, this has been terrific. I really want to thank Beth, Paul, and Jim for sharing their insights today, and thank our listeners for joining us. Before closing, though, I do want to remind you that we've included a link to the earnings pre-release article in our Hot Topics box, and it's also available in our earnings guidance practice area. And I commend it, and I commend this podcast to any of you who find yourself in the unfortunate position of having to address this issue. Thanks, everyone. This concludes today's podcast.